Okay, now we are on.
There
So
we
good
go.
morning, Lindsay.
Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for
We
joining us.
put you on
I know that you
speakerphone.
have a very, very busy schedule.
I do, but I'm so happy to be here with you.
that we have a lot of parents, especially since this goes out to a lot of autism parents that will, I'm sure, greatly benefit from the information you'll be able to share. I'd like to just briefly give your bio so that our listeners know a little bit about you and your background as well. Lindsay Beal is a pediatric occupational therapist. She evaluates and with a private practice in New York City, who evaluates and treats children and adolescents with autism spectrum disorders, sensory processing issues, developmental delays, physical disabilities, and other challenges. Her latest book is Sensory Processing Challenges: Effective Clinical Work with Kids and Teens. She is also co-author of the award-winning Raising a Sensory Smart Child: The Definitive Handbook for Helping Your Child with Sensory Processing Issues, with a foreword by Temple Grandin, as well as Sensory Processing Masterclass DVD programs. Her websites are sensorysmarts.com and sensoryprocessingchallenges.com, where she offers free webcasts, checklists, and articles, and more. So again, good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning.
So for our listeners, some people are familiar with sensory processing disorders and some are not at all. So I like to kind of talk from that level as well when we mention things like sensory processing systems. Could you explain a little bit about what different sensory systems there are, different sensory processing disorders? Just kind of give a little underlying background to begin with.
Sure. Quite simply put, a child first learns about the world through his or her senses, experiencing all of the different sounds, sights, movement experiences, tastes, smells, and so on, through their sensory systems before their brain develops and they start to develop abstract thinking and reasoning. The child will move through space, eat food, check out interesting objects, hear different voices and different sounds at different frequencies, and so on. So, sensory processing is the neurological process by which the person takes all these little bits of sensory input and turns it into a meaningful message so they know how to function. Out and about in the world and feel comfortable inside their own bodies. Now, kids with sensory challenges experience the world differently. And sensory challenges are all over the place with kids with autism spectrum disorders. Parents do know that. Sometimes we don't know why a child is acting a certain way in a certain situation. 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be because there's some kind of sensory problem going on. Kids can be hypersensitive to any variety of sensory experiences. They may be very hypersensitive to certain sounds, certain kinds of sounds, certain people's voices, noisy places, high frequency sounds like blenders and vacuum cleaners and hair dryers, that kind of thing. At school, it can be a real problem with the fire alarm or just even another child making noise in a classroom can really set off a kid with sensory problems. So, it can range from quirky preferences and intolerance that most of us have to something really extreme. And we see some of the most severe sensory processing problems in autism. And, for these kids, it can be physically and emotionally painful. And anytime you have unreliable sensory information about the external world and also from within your own body, you're not going to feel very safe and secure, and it can be very o overwhelming for a person. So some common signs or sense of sensory problems are over or under sensitivity to touch, movement, sight, sounds, taste or smells. Often a child will dislike getting messy, dislike, touching glue or Play-Doh or getting suntan lotion put on them, disliking getting their teeth brushed. They can't handle these experiences very well. They may be very sensitive to clothing. Often they'll seem to always be on the go or really resist movement. They just want to sort of blob on the floor like a wet noodle, because movement is very stimulating, overstimulating for them. Kids may squint, or blink or rub their eyes frequently. A lot of kids, especially kids on the spectrum, may use their peripheral vision, quite frequently, looking out of the corner of their eyes, avoiding eye contact and that kind of thing because the visual input is so overstimulating, or sometimes it's that peripheral vision that is most stable for a child with sensory problems. Kids may get very dizzy easily, just riding a car, they get super dizzy and uncomfortable or bending over, or they may get dizzy never at all, right? It's like a child may want to be on a spinning toy in the playground for an hour and you're getting sick just watching them, and they're having a wonderful time. It's just not affecting their body the way that you would expect to. Kids can seem clumsy or careless, and they can be really uncomfortable in group settings, such as parties or schools. Now, I'm giving you some generalities. Everyone is different. We all know it's a truism that once you've met one person with autism or sensory issues, you've met one person with autism or sensory issues. Everyone's different. And kids can be different in different situations depending on what I call sensory load. And sensory load, I liken to a paper plate, right? You take a paper plate to a picnic and you're holding this paper plate and you put on a hot dog and some potato chips and maybe a little coleslaw and your plate is fine. And then you put some potato salad on your plate and the whole plate falls apart. So, using that anecdote, when we think about sensory problems, right, to hold up against the kind of sensory load that we're putting on that child's paper plate, we either need to put less food on that plate or build a stronger plate. So, when I'm dealing with a child with sensory processing problems, I'm doing both, right? And as parents, you need to do both. You need to think about what situations are just too hard for my child. What can I do to reduce the sensory challenge so that it's, a reasonable amount for my child to handle? And meanwhile, how am I going to get my child's underlying ability to handle these kinds of situations in daily life, at school, in the playground, in the supermarket? How am I going to strengthen their ability to tolerate these situations? So that's what we're talking about here.
Can you give a few examples of what types of things that people can do to improve those sensory issues, whether it's just in a situation at the grocery store or in a classroom, or long term, the types of work that especially occupational therapists will do with a sensory overload child for their issues? Because again, everybody is so different. What types of things can they do for these children?
Okay. Let's use the example of the supermarket. Your child may become overstimulated in a supermarket. I become overstimulated in the supermarket when it's rush hour, it's crowded, it's busy, there's lots of people with these carts ready to bang into you at all times. It's very difficult. There's so much to see and look at. There's fluorescent lighting. There's just it's really a multi-sensory bombardment for a lot of people, and especially for the hypersensitive child. So what can you do about the supermarket? Well, the first thing, what a lot of parents do is if their child is melting down in the supermarket every time, you don't take them to the supermarket, right? So you get food delivered, you go by yourself without your child. That's one route. That's not an ideal route. Avoidance is never ideal, right? We want our kids out and about in the world, experiencing the world, and becoming increasingly independent. So Second, to avoiding it altogether, you need to modify the experience. Obviously, if possible, you're not going to go to the supermarket at the busiest time of day, right? But we also know that happens sometimes. We're all living in the real world and we can't control everything. So what can you do for your child who's hypersensitive to sound? You can put on sound-reducing headphones like the Peltor brand, right? Really, really reduces the sound. It doesn't make the child incapable of hearing. It takes a hypersensitive person and just sort of brings them to what we consider more normal level of hearing sensitivity. So you reduce the sound. You may need to reduce the lighting experience. A lot of kids react badly to downcast lighting, so overhead lighting that's coming down and creating glare that's bouncing off the floor up into their eyes. So you can have your child wear a cap, a baseball cap, when you go to the supermarket, or sunglasses inside the supermarket, that kind of thing, to reduce the visual burden. You can give the child a list of things to look for in the supermarket, so they're not looking for everything. It can be sort of like I Spy. You're going to go down this aisle. Let's find, you know, aisle 5, and let's find the kind of cereal the child loves. You may need to have a photo or just a written list and do that kind of I Spy game with a child. Sometimes wearing a weighted vest could be helpful for a child. These are things the parent needs to work with an OT to figure out what works to help the child feel more comfortable. Sometimes wearing a weighted backpack, not too heavy, but a little bit of weight on the back can be very helpful and reassuring for the child. You can give the child something to hold in their hands that they find reassuring, like a fidget tool. And notice that I'm calling it a tool and not a toy, because it's a tool to stay focused and self-regulated. So it's these mm-hmm. kinds of things, and I go through, in both of my books, I go through scenarios at home, such as taking a bath, a shower, trimming nails, getting a haircut, school, sitting at circle time, reading, dealing with fire alarms. I go through ways to modify those experiences so that the child is able to engage more comfortably despite sensory problems. Now, you also asked about what OTs might do to help.
Right.
It starts, and that's very important, because parents are amazing at, like, getting their kids, understanding what's hard for them and predicting what's hard for them and learning how to give social stories or help the child predict what's going to happen in a certain situation and helping them through that. And that's kind of like putting the right ingredients on that paper plate. So meanwhile, the OT needs to work with the family, with the school, to strengthen the paper plate that holds it all together. So OTs, of course, it starts with a full evaluation of sensory processing skills. An OT working in a school system may or may not specialize in this. I think it's important to work with someone who has a lot of expertise in the area of sensory processing challenges.
And autism spectrum disorders. I found that myself with my own son, that it's important to find specialists who also are really familiar with autism spectrum disorders.
Oh, absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. Everything I'm saying is like with the assumption that we're talking about kids on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also important to get those ABA people who might be working with your kids on board with this stuff, right? Because you're doing an ABA session under fluorescent lighting that the child finds painful, the child's not getting the most out of the session. They can't do the best because they're physically in pain. So it's very important to get them on board as well. So what an OT might do with a child on the spectrum who has sensory processing issues, and again, that's just about every child, is we'll do things like, let's take the touch system, the tactile system. We'll do a lot of deep pressure work with the child. We might do something that is commonly called brushing. That's using a special surgical scrub brush to apply deep pressure into the deep layers of the skin, followed by joint compressions, which is pushing those joints together to basically bombard the child's system so that that high arousal level calms down. That's an oversimplification, but that's what we do with all these tactile issues. A lot of massage, swaddling, rolling up in a blanket to get that swaddle input, using a compression garment to desensitize those oversensitive tactile receptors. We might do vibration on the body or inside the mouth for the child who's having difficulty with textures of foods. We need to desensitize an oversensitive mouth or, and I hope this isn't confusing, sensitize an undersensitive mouth. A lot of our kids on the spectrum or kids with sensory issues have low muscle tone in and around their mouths. So they're not feeling and low sensitivity. So they're just not feeling the food and it's uncomfortable and it's alarming to have these different textures and temperatures in the mouth. There's a fear of gagging on the food because those many muscles aren't working well. So we can work right inside the mouth. So that's the tactile system, the auditory system. You know, anytime you're dealing with sensory issues or, you know, anything to do with our kids with special needs, you have to take a multi-pronged approach. The first one is to protect them from pain. That is our job as human beings, as parents, as teachers, as grown-ups. So if a child is screaming in pain because sound hurts her ears, we got to believe that and protect them. And we need to investigate what's going on. An OT will do a lot of investigation. Does the child have migraines? Does the child have a lingering ear infection with residual fluid that's distorting sound in his or her ear? Do we need to resolve that? Is the child getting sick a lot? That's often something that we look at. So we're protecting, investigating, and then we're building skills. And in terms of auditory hypersensitivity, we do therapeutic listening programs in which a child will listen to specially engineered music over headphones that is designed in the same way that exercise exercises the muscles of the body, the arms and legs. Therapeutic listening will exercise the inner ear so that the child is more able to tolerate a wide range of frequencies that can be painful or difficult to process for the child. We might also recommend an FM unit for the child who's pulling in so much sound. A lot of kids on the spectrum can hear incredibly well. It's not that they don't hear, it's that they hear too well. Most of us start hearing at 0 to 15 decibels of sound. Some kids, Temple Grandin, could hear at negative 10 or 15 decibels of sound. That's too much sound coming into the ear, right? So that's when you use something like the sound-reducing headphones, or you might use an FM unit that the teacher speaks into and the sound travels directly to the child's ears. She's wearing headphones, special headphones, or there might be a speaker on her desk or near where she sits at school. In addition, there's a lot of desensitization to certain sounds that are really scary for that person. Let's say you have a child who's terrified of dogs barking. Terrified, sees a dog, terrified the dog is going to bark because it really hurts his ears. So you can record that dog barking, and then play it at home while you're sitting cuddled up in a beanbag chair eating cookies and kind of check out what that sound is like and try to break that fear connection. There are also, Kara Kaczynski is a great OT that's done a recording called Soundies. She's taken some of the most commonly frightening sounds for kids and adults, and set them to really calming music so that you can do that program without going out and recording things yourself. And that's called Soundees, and that's the website, I believe, is Root to Greatness, two with the number two, roottogreatness.com. So those are a couple of the different things we do. In terms of improving vestibular issues, the vestibular system is located in the inner ear, and it tells us about gravity and how our bodies are moving. And the vestibular system works with the proprioceptive system, which is located in your joints, muscles, and connective tissue. They work together like a GPS system, telling you where your body parts are at all times, where you are in space, how fast you're moving, which way is up. If you start falling over, it helps your muscle tone to kick in. Very, very important systems. And in my books, I do explain them in much greater detail than I could do here. But a lot of OT works on improving those sensory processing skills in kids, especially those on the autistic spectrum who have problems with gross motor skills, catching a ball, running, jumping, climbing, moving gracefully, navigating through space. So we'll do a lot of vestibular work with kids too. So those should give you some idea of the kinds of interventions that we do.
And apraxia and dyspraxia come up a lot, and a lot of people aren't familiar with what that means. Could you just briefly address those, the differences between the two, and what you know, what kind of things they might do for that as well?
Well, basically, we're talking about motor planning skills. Let's say you or I decided, I'm going to learn how to roller skate. You have to decide you want to roller skate, right? That's the first step, is coming up with a concept. Then you need to decide how you're going to go about doing it. You need to go get roller skates, someone to teach you how, and then you need to put them on and stand up and try. And then the implementation of it, and that's actually doing the action. When a child has difficulty with motor planning, and I prefer not to use those jargon labels because they are mm-hmm. confusing for people. Mm-hmm. A person can have difficulty at any one of those steps. A lot of our kids on the autistic spectrum may not really come up with the idea of something they want to do, right? So we may see a lot of repetitive play. I don't know how to motor plan, I don't have the praxis to do something cool with this toy car, so I'm going to do the same thing over and over. I'm going to spin a wheel here, and it's really good, and I know how to do it, and I'm really great at it. Or they may learn, get scaffolded some better play. I'm going to use these blocks, I'm going to build a parking lot, and I'm going to drive my car into it. And they'll do that over and over and over again because they can't build it from there. They don't have the motor plan for it. Apraxia can also affect, and I guess that's called dyspraxia. They're just not terms that I like to use. But it can okay. also affect the muscles of the mouth. It can also affect speech. So that there's a lot that goes into speaking. There's the auditory mm-hmm. hearing piece, listening piece, processing, memory, all those things. But there's also the motor synthesis. How am I going to make these sounds? And a lot of our kids who have poor speech language skills are actually suffering from poor oral motor planning. Does that help?
Yes, definitely. And can you also tell us where you would, I have this on my website at naturallyhealingautism.com as well, but I'm sure you have some great resources as to where a parent would find a specialist in autism spectrum disorders, regardless of where in the country or even possibly the world that they live. Do you have a good resource base that you like to send people to?
Well, I have a lot of information on the Sensory Smarts sensory.com website, SENSORY, SMARTS.com. I have a lot of information and resources right there, including a page that says helpful websites. And you click on that page and then you get tons of international resources. There's also there's access to different autism groups. I'm pulling it up to see as we speak what I have there for you. Different autism groups that provide parenting support, as well as early intervention programs. There's Autism College. There's the online Asperger syndrome information and support group, OASIS. So there are lots of resources listed there. What I've done is I put a couple of different resources for finding therapists who are knowledgeable about sensory processing disorder, not specifically about autism, but sensory processing disorder. Parents can click on that, find an OT, and then I have one, a directory in the U.S., I have one in Canada, I have one that's a little bit more international. And when you go and look at that person's information, you can see whether or not they have a lot of extensive experience with kids on the spectrum.
Excellent. Yeah, that's really good to know. Because I would assume you feel the same as I, that it's very important to get your child's school, the teachers on board with all of this as well, so that they have a greater education, for one, for your child and then future children they'll be dealing with, and a greater understanding of what the child's needs are in that classroom. So the child doesn't just get in trouble because they think they're being disruptive on purpose, or they're not paying attention because they don't want to, or they're just trying to be ornery. That
right.
These teachers are educated, along with whether it's an IEP plan or whatever else the parents are doing with the school.
Absolutely.
You work with that as well, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Parents, you know, and even more so teachers, sometimes need help. I mean, some of them are so amazing and so knowledgeable and so get it. Most of them do, but we know that some of them have, because due to the way they were educated, they have difficulty sometimes connecting the dots between sensory problems and behaviors. And it's important to get someone who can help them do that. You know, we think a lot about STIM behaviors, self-stimulatory behaviors, and we've been taught, teachers are often taught in their schooling that STIM behaviors, flapping hands, pulling on an ear, spinning around in circles, these are non-purposeful behaviors, when in fact they serve really important purposes for that person. It's a coping strategy. It's a way to relieve boredom. It's a way to tune out overwhelming sensory input. It's a way to rev up your body for things that you feel you need. And it also, MRI studies have shown that it actually increases the body's production of endogenous opioids that help the person feel better. So we need to understand what those STIM behaviors, which are so problematic in school and at home, and figure out how to meet those needs in a more acceptable, beneficial way. And you've got to be able to connect the dots between that behavior and what's going on, what's driving the behavior.
Right. The more work we can help these, the more we can help these children, not only does it help them just physically, but also emotionally, that it helps their self-esteem as they grow older. They're more aware of what their needs are and why they're doing things. And teachers aren't, you know, and other parents or other people aren't telling them, you know, that they're bad in some way because they aren't doing what they're being asked to do. So it helps their self-esteem a lot as well.
Absolutely. My ideal scenario with a child or a teenager or an adult that I'm working with, whether or not they're on the spectrum, is for them to really tune into their bodies and say, oh my gosh, this place is really noisy. It's making me uncomfortable. I need to do, you know, so-and-so, either take a break or put on my headphones or, you know. So to become self-advocates, I think, is essential.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are, Lindsay, so I don't want to keep you too long. But again, Lindsay's books, this is Lindsay Beal. Her latest book is Sensory Processing Challenges, Effective Clinical Work with Kids and Teens. And she has also authored Raising a Sensory Smart Child, the definitive handbook for helping your child with sensory processing issues. And her websites are sensorysmarts.com, and that's the one that has all of those resources listed. And there is a second one as well, sensoryprocessingchallenges.com. So those are some of Lindsay's resources. This is Karen Thomas, and I will be releasing this on March 1st at autismone.org. And my website is naturallyhealingautism.com, and I'm also at Facebook/naturallyhealingautism.com. Lindsay, thank you very much again. I'm sure you've been very, very helpful for many, many parents today, and we appreciate you giving us your time.
My pleasure.
And make it a great day.
Thanks so much. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.